Good morning. As Kate said, she's asked several members of our Sangha to speak about our practices and about bringing it into the world and how our own practice supports it. I would have to say that I've had a practice for very many years, more than I can count. But my practice in the last sort of 8 to 10 years has been, I would say, deepened and altered and shaped by my training in Buddhist chaplaincy, which I did at the Upaya Zen Center. Part of the training at the Upaya Zen Center requires us to consistently practice in charnel ground. Charnel ground, of course, is literally and historically above ground where the bodies were placed out to decompose. And it's a traditional site of Buddhist death practices in many traditions. They're fearful places, places of roaming spirits and hungry ghosts. And we don't have to look very far in our culture for figurative sites of charnel ground. Poverty on our tough streets and homelessness, prisons, the glass towers of Wall Street, toxic work environments, places of death. There are many ways to meet death and the loss of people and animals, rising ocean temperatures and disappearing bird song. For me personally, I chose to serve in hospice, practicing with the dying. And I chose to serve in the Gulf oil spill in Louisiana after the devastating spill there, and in the Canadian oil sands with the Chippewa Nation there. Part of chaplaincy training at Upaya is also becoming a Zen peacemaker, and I'm sure many of you are very familiar with Bernie Glassman and his Zen Peacemaker's Order. We're required to take those vows as well, the three tenets of the peacemakers, which are not knowing, which is giving up all fixed ideas of our universe, bearing witness to both the suffering and the joy of the world, and loving action, which quite remarkably emerges if one is really practicing the first two. It turns out we don't have to figure out solutions of how to fix things ahead of time. Today I want to particularly talk about the process of bearing witness. I have found it a great tool in waking me up over and over again to no separation and in taking my practice into the world. I have found it a practice of seeing clearly and also of self-care. Peacemaking is the functioning of bearing witness, and it's not a distanced observation, but in fact it's becoming the situation and listening with the full body, the full mind, and trusting that skillful action will come. It's basically seeing oneself in other and seeing other in ourselves. The Zen Peacemaker's Order over many years now has supported bearing witness retreats in places of great suffering and great charnel grounds of Auschwitz and Rwanda, Bosnia and the refugee camps. I wanted to speak today about a bearing witness retreat that I attended last summer in the Black Hills and the Pine Ridge Reservation of the Lakota people of South Dakota. Especially today because there's such a surge of a wish for all of us to reconcile with our First Nations, and it's there's so many parallels right now, which is very welcome. The retreat was designed to bear witness to the genocide of the Native people, to our systems of colonial thoughts and values and results, actions that still persist to this day, bearing witness to the earth itself, the catastrophe of loss, and to our own separation from the earth. I chose to drive my van there. It took almost a week to drive across the continent. Driving through the land and the waterways, I wanted to settle into the Great Plains before witnessing the land. The plains are a part of our continent that people often just fly over or they pass by on the way through to somewhere else. But in fact, they're a vast waving inland sea of grass and ceaseless sweeping wind, always wind. I found it gorgeous. You can see still teepee circles and buffalo jumps and stone circles, an almost imperceptible footprint of the fact that people have lived there for 10,000 years. You can still imagine it without fences and without ownership. The natives call it the Great Mystery. Since leaving Washington, I didn't see a single other Volkswagen van. But as I approached Montana and the Dakotas, I was sharing the road with literally thousands of Harley-Davidsons. Turned out they were en route to the biggest motorcycle, the 75th Sturgis Rally, on the continent. So camping at night, I was circled by bikers, by their women, and offering me great company and great protection. I met up with three other chaplains in Rapid City, South Dakota, one of the toughest and most racist towns I have ever walked in. Together we formed a circle of Sangha. First we were taken to the reservation itself, a place of grinding poverty and grim survival, and specifically to the mass grave site of the massacre of Wounded Knee. Standing as a witness there, you can feel the suffering. It's still emanating from the earth, the restless, unsettled spirits, unresolved grief. It is a hell realm. Next, we were taken to the Badlands, which is a very remote and fierce, a very beautiful ethereal landscape with gullies and buttes and stone peaks. This is where the last of the Dakota ghost dancers hid, trying to call back their ancestors to help them. And they were circled and starved. Most of the retreat was spent in the ceremonial Sundance in holding of the Black Hills, their most spiritual of places. They refer to it as the heart of everything that is. The people don't live there, they go there to practice ceremony. We were supported by meals and water, by a fire pit, a dawn prayer circle that always began in the east, always began giving thanks to others, just like our first paramita. We were supported by being guided and invited by the Lakota spirit holders in healing practices, by the form of council practice. As a Zen peacemaker, I am trained in this, and of course it's completely natural to the natives. This mala, which gratefully Kate blessed for me before I went, was our talking piece. We were held by the beauty of the land, by the arms of my Dharma sisters. In the largest of the canvas tents, there was a mic and a stage set up. And for 5 days, we listened to testimony, to personal narratives, to storytelling. This was very tough. Pain and despair and anguish just spilled out. Many people speaking aloud their suffering for the very first time. They have had no truth and reconciliation processes yet then. So this was a beginning, a small beginning, but a beginning. Mostly the men talked. The women seemed to understand that their men had been so damaged and silenced for so long that they allowed the men to speak. Edge walkers, white buffalo calf woman, pipe holders, two spirits, the two-leggeds, that's us, the standing people, those are the trees. We need your prayers. Pray with us. We are POWs here, caught and imprisoned by poverty, broken promises, and dishonor. You may want our culture, but you haven't wanted our struggle. I was too drunk to pull the trigger on myself. We were asked to wake up over and over to the language and practice of domination as directed by the disastrous papal bulls, to the truth of North America being a post-genocide culture, to our shared suffering and our shared humanity. During the day, it was blazing hot. with only a couple of open tent flaps at the very back of the tent. So I sat back there, a northerner, trying to get a little bit of breeze, and sat with the older women like myself, the grandmothers. Most with gnarled hands from rheumatoid arthritis, missing toes from diabetes, deep coughs from COPD, sitting on broken lawn chairs, one lying on a mat with an oxygen tank. The sacred Black Hills now contain open uranium pits, and the water is contaminated. Charmaine Whiteface, a defender of the Black Hills, with half her long hair braided, half wild, honoring both. When things get serious, we dance. Sandra, a teacher despairing of how many of her students lived with the broken cord of fetal alcohol syndrome. She hopeful in the return of ceremony to the young. The auntie quietly beading a knife sheath of softened deer hide, her black hair roughly chopped off, acknowledging the recent suicide of her 10-year-old niece. It is our way. Our young are running back to the Creator. Grandmother Beatrice, who was then 90, one of the 13 Indigenous grandmothers that I'm sure many of you have heard of, held my face in her shaking hands. Thank you for coming. You are one of us. I asked her what she would like me to tell. She said two things. She said, tell them we are still here. Tell them there is no reconciliation without justice. As women do everywhere, we shared food. They offering me Cheetos, Pringles, and Wrigley's spearmint gum. I offered in return cherries, almonds, and candied ginger. We spoke of our children and our families. We giggled. But mostly we sat in silence, listening. For the Lakota, in the presence of greatness or sorrow, silence is a mark of respect. They practice silence with complete unself-conscious ease. As Zen practitioners, we understand silence. My sitting in connected silence with these women had the qualitative energy and grace of a Sishin. I was reminded of my Roshi's expression, Soto monks have grandmother's eyes. In bearing witness, we also bore witness to the joy. To Krishnadas was with us, his evening kirtan, the melodic cedar flutes, the sheer laughter, the spiritual resurgence of ceremony, the taste of sweet tobacco, transformational prayer, extraordinary resilience, a new relationship among people, a new relationship with this earth, the glorious sky, and deep love. I left the Black Hills with a heart overflowing, tender, thankful, and very determined. Very grateful to be moving back across our continent, slowly, sleeping on the earth. It was a profound experience of practice, of waking up to what? To becoming an ally, to the truth of interconnectedness, the tyranny of duality, the mystery of mutuality. Of course, our Indigenous people already know this. Waking up to becoming intimate with the 10,000 things, to the truth that each one of us is an arm of Avalokiteshvara, enabling her to do her work, enabling us to do our own. Just as one of my sister chaplains and I were preparing to leave camp, the last thing Bernie said to us was, if you think of yourself as separate, you feel that the only resources you can count on are your own. If you know that you are not separate from the rest of the world. All of the world's resources are at your disposal, and anything is possible. The wind and I sit together until there is no wind, until there is only wind. May it be so.